joining us now to give us some perspective on the unplugged version of the Iraq Study Group's report, Michael Rubin of the American Enterprise Institute. Michael, good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Michael, the reaction, of course, a lot of it that we've read, ranges from ebullient from the various members of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. They seem thrilled with the report.
And Jimmy Carter probably, too.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter, I think, loved it. A lot of the Democrats thought this was a good first step. And then people like Ralph Peters and John Podoritz and, you know, Crystal were just, this is a disaster. Paris Hilton could have come up with this report. What is your take?
I'm sort of in the latter camp. Forget the partisanship for a second. When I look at the report, there are some fundamental problems with it. First and foremost, Baker and Hamilton rest their conclusions on the assumption that Iran and Syria want there to be a stable Iraq. That's projection in its worst form. If they wanted a stable, secure Iraq, they wouldn't be shipping weapons and helping jihadists enter it. And to put our national security in the hands of the goodwill of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and Syrian terror sponsors, I think, honestly, is unwise. Let me be diplomatic. The other problem I see with the report is that they repeat again and again that we have to build an international consensus. They have to build a consensus within the committee and so forth. Part of the problem with Iraq policy from day one has been too much emphasis on consensus and too little emphasis on getting the job done. And the last thing, just very briefly, I thought the report oozed a sort of effete diplomatic contempt for our military. The military should do this, the military should do that. When they were in Iraq, the only commission member who left the green zone was Chuck Robb. And
he went to El Anbar, right?
He went
out to El Anbar,
which is right on the edge of where Baghdad and Anbar go. Mm-hmm. But the point being that any of these guys could have, and women, could have embedded with the U.S. military in different provinces and really gotten an understanding. If they're not going to do that, then they
even I did that
to the guys on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, even I did that. I mean,
you could learn much more, and you did learn much more when you were there, from talking to the privates and from the lieutenants and from the majors and the sergeants than you just do from talking to some of the generals inside the green zone.
Yeah, the NCOs know what time it is in Iraq. And I was there before the whole thing just blew up with the Golden Mosque bombing, so it was bad when I was there, but I actually was pretty optimistic. I mean, that shows you, you know, how much I know, but I was pretty optimistic because I talked to a lot of the Iraqi folks in the hospitals and the orphanages and the villages that I went to, and they, you know, they really wanted a stable place, and they were glad that Saddam was gone, and they were hoping he was going to be executed soon, and so was I.
Well, I think many of the Iraqis still do, but they're a little bit worried about our staying power, our staying commitment. This report just underlines that their worries are real. But aside from the 71 separate recommendations, one of the major problems is what you never want to do is give the impression that you're rewarding terrorism and you're rewarding violence. And that's what this report does. I mean, you can spin it any which way you want, but the fact of the matter is, if you make concessions to terrorism, the only thing it does is create more terrorism. That's a lesson which Baker should have learned from the 1983 Beirut barracks bombing, and which the United States should have learned from 1993 when we withdrew from Mogadishu under fire.
Now, what about the push for the renewed efforts in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Because so often you hear from these terrorist leaders that it's, you know, it's all about Israel, what Israel's done to the Palestinian people. And they've sold that line for so long. And it seems to me that this part of this recommendation from the Iraq Study Group kind of agrees with that linkage, you know, has to be dealt with.
Well, that's the Jimmy Carter school of thought. And while I'm not a big fan of Shimon Peres, the former Israeli foreign minister and elder statesman, I do think that he was correct when he said that the Middle East is sort of like a dinner party. You're either invited to the dinner party or you're the main course. And the fact of the matter is, there's nothing that Tehran, Damascus, and others wouldn't salivate more at having a conference to try to make Israel make more concessions, when, again, that's not the issue. Saddam funding suicide bombers was an issue. Iran funding Hezbollah, Syria hosting terrorist training camps, for Hamas. Those are all issues we need to deal with, and forcing the only democracy in the region to make further concessions to terrorism doesn't bring reward. And Israel withdrew from the Gaza Strip, and look what happened. And the other point is, when people say it's all about Israel, well, if you look at the Danish cartoon crisis a year ago, or if you look at these French riots in the Paris suburbs...
Or Somalia today,
none of those have to do with Israel. None of the problems there have to do with occupation. It all comes from this radical Islamist ideology. And in fact, when I was looking at some old declassified documents from 1946, before the war, before Israel's independence, you had the predecessor of the CIA saying that the greatest threat over the horizon would be Islamic terrorism, one time that the CIA did get it right, and that was before Israel even existed.
We're going to hold Michael Rubin over. We're going to open this up to your questions, 800-876-4123, on The Laura Ingraham Show. We have a lot on our plate. We'll get through it all. Don't go away.
Got to take this country back.
Ingraham Show.
Nobody wants to be Hank Williams. Sang about the lost highway. Saturday nights after rhyme.
When you don't believe a word I say. We can't go on together with suspicious.
It's an honest assessment. We've listened to a lot of people, over 200. We visited the country, and I do not think we have a mistaken view. The situation in Iraq today is dire.
Apparently they needed how many months to come up with that conclusion? Lee Hamilton on the Today Show. Kind of the glory days return for those 10, isn't it? What was the youngest age of anyone on that commission? Who was the youngest? Do we know? Might have been Leon Panetta. And I don't think there was anyone who was below...
Vernon Jordan?
Age 60. Well, he's up there. He's 67, 66. Oh, they're all in their 60s and wise men and only one woman. We're the feminists complaining about that. 800-876-4123 on The Laura Ingraham Show. We continue with Michael Rubin, the American Enterprise Institute, on what this report will ultimately mean. Michael... If this report, in large measure, is taken to heart by the administration and the administration proceeds to act on it in a real meaningful way, will this make us safer around the world? I know it's a tough question.
It most certainly won't make us safer. And honestly, I don't think that George Bush will accept it and will act on it, because leadership is a little bit more than just doing what the polls say is most popular at any given time. We've already seen that relying on Iran and Syria for national security don't do us any good. The Iranian ambassador whom Baker and Hamilton met was the same Iranian ambassador that gave Zalmay Khalilzad, when he was in the National Security Council, he's now the ambassador to Baghdad, the guarantee that Iran wouldn't interfere in Iraq after the war began, and he outright lied.
Great. Fantastic. And the report, of course, recommends direct talks with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. I mean, direct talks between the United States and him.
Well, just remember, I mean, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president, may say a lot of outrageous things, but the real power in Iran, the dictator of Iran is the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. You may remember that back on May 31st, Condoleezza Rice offered Iran a way forward. Either they would stop their nuclear enrichment and the U.S. would reward them, or they would continue and that the United Nations would sanction them. Well, 4 days after that happened, Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, got up and said to the United States, why should we listen to you? Why don't you just admit that you're weak and your razor's blunt? And today the Iranian papers are full of news. Ahmadinejad said that Iran's nuclear program is hitting the point of no return. They don't take us seriously. They don't respond well to weakness. They exploit weakness. That's what realism is all about. unfortunately, Baker and Hamilton may call themselves realists, but they're being utopian, believing in the power of diplomacy with insincere partners.
I can't believe that none of them left the green zone except for Chuck Robb. I mean,
and what makes
that's
it more
ridiculous,
outrageous, if I may, is that the U.S. Embassy offered to let them leave the green zone. They offered to make the resources available to let them do it, and they chose not to.
I mean, you can't. How can you do this report with staying in the green zone? You just cannot do it. I'm sorry. I find that to be just a joke. Let's
well,
go
I
to.
I mean, the way the green zone is for the listeners who don't.
Oh yeah, we should explain it. That's
there.
Right. I hated being in the green zone, by the way. I couldn't stand being in the green zone. I thought I learned nothing when I was there for a day and a half. I wanted to get out of there as soon as possible.
Well, you might as well be in an office building in Washington or Tampa or Los Angeles or wherever, because basically the green zone is shielded from the reality of Baghdad by huge blast walls. It's a different atmosphere. And if you're, all you're doing is looking at PowerPoint demonstrations on the computer inside the green zone, it really is no different than if you hadn't left Washington at all.
Very quickly, Patrick, Seattle, our great affiliate there. We're on live in Seattle on AM 1300. Patrick.
Hey, listen, I don't think that we're losing in Iraq. I think the media portrays that we're losing. It's just like Vietnam. There are 17 provinces in Iraq. There's trouble in three. I don't understand why they just don't let the military do their job. Stop all the politicking, and we'd be fine.
Well, Michael, you can take a swat at that.
Well, in the 18 provinces of Iraq, what I think you need to look at and what a lot of people need to look at is the U.S. media. You're right to put your finger there. The U.S. media reports on Iraq and likes to portray themselves as a neutral force, but what they don't see is how the Iraqis react to the U.S. media. When Al Gore gets up and says this is the worst mistake in U.S. history, even worse than the Civil War, when others get up and say that we're absolutely defeated, that emboldens the terrorists in Iraq.
You bet.
To pretend that our media and the statements of some of our politicians have no impact on Iraq is ridiculous. Take John Murtha. He has an admirable military record, but politicians aren't elected because of their military record. They're elected because of their judgment. I was talking to Iraqi insurgents, Iraqi terrorists, right after Murtha made his comments, and they turned to me. This was in a meeting in Jordan and said, you see, you can say whatever you want, but we know we're winning when we hear that.
Brian, very quickly, Cincy, KRC, Bri.
Yeah, I think that we are overestimating the power of these terrorist groups, and I think we're overestimating the ability we have to have overall victory. And I say that because the kinds of people that use terrorism tactics are unable to do anything other than terrorism. They don't have the means or the money or the weapons to do anything else, but these isolated.
Oh, they had a way, Brian. We're running out of time, and I get the gist of your point. They took down the World Trade Center towers, and they smashed into the Pentagon, and they almost, if they were going to have their way, take out the Capitol Dome. Michael, close it out for us.
Yeah, no, I mean, basically, we're up against a larger force here, and fortunately, I mean, this report encapsulates everything we shouldn't do. Fortunately, I still think that George Bush has the leadership and the moral clarity not to apologize for doing the right thing, but to show some real leadership here.
Michael Rubin, I know this is a lot to digest, and you did it very quickly over the last 24 hours, from the American Enterprise Institute, co-author of Eternal Iran and editor of the Middle East Quarterly. Michael, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.